Well, we just had to wait for that part to come up, and that is because we needed to hear the Brooklyn-born, Spanish Harlem, and the South Bronx-raised Ray Barreto on congas, jamming with a few friends on the title track of this Fania album called Acid, recorded in 1967. Barreto was a master percussionist and conguero and played with just about all the greats of jazz and Latin music genres, and even funk bands and rock bands and hard bop and bebop. Phenomenal musician, also a great composer and arranger. Sadly, he died in 2006 at the age of 77, but by that time, he certainly accounted for himself and left a great legacy of music across all genres, practically. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Friday, February the 21st, and Friday is now our Tuesday. Tuesday, of course, we had the second part of a discussion on the Stand Your Ground law in connection with the loud music case that yielded a most perplexing decision by a jury. So we decided that we will still have our regular open forum, except it will be today. So there you go. So you know what to do, 888-874-4888. We're going to be talking about issues that are important to you and take your takes and your perspectives on these issues. Well, we start with Harvey from Berkeley. Thank you, Harvey, for calling.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Hello, wonderful Harvey. How are you today?
Very good. And I'd like to talk about something really important to me because I live here in California. I'd like to talk about closing the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant and why it's actually important to all of America. You know, 25% of the food that goes across American tables comes from the Central Valley, and the Central Valley is located in back of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant, and prevailing winds always blow inland, so if we have a Fukushima-like event, the foods will become radioactive laced, and that'll be the end of everything. But that's not the reason I'm calling. It turns out that the Diablo Canyon uses 2.5 billion, that's with a B, billion gallons a day to cool its two reactors. It has to be cooled. If it's not cooled, there's a nuclear core meltdown, as we experienced in Fukushima. And even when there's a meltdown, they have to keep it under water. They have to keep pumping water into there, because if there's no water, then it burns off into the air, and you have radioactivity into the air. It's like nuclear fallout. So they have to keep it cool. So the thing is that here in California, we live with 247 identified fault line systems, and the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant is around 13 known fault lines. In fact, there's one directly under plant number one, the Diablo Cove fault line. And so these plants are vulnerable to the big one. We're always threatened with the big one. And at the same time, they're fracking the Monterey Shale, which is behind the plant, and offshore. And so this could trigger the big one, which is a mega, which is like a 9-point mega earthquake that they experienced in Fukushima. So we're really in trouble here now. Here's the bad part. Fukushima, the websites say they put about 300 tons of radioactive groundwater into the Fukushima harbor every day. And the thing is, if Diablo Canyon goes off and it pumps 2.5 billion gallons on a daily basis, then the west coast will be flooded with radioactive salt water. And the thing is that they want to install now, the big thing is they want to put in 17 desalination plants up and down the west coast. Well, I say, before you put in 17 desalination plants, close down the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant, because if one bad day we get a good shaker and it's only built for a 7.5 earthquake, Fukushima was a 9, one bad day and it's all over, all those billions of dollars of investment for desal plants gone. So close the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant, please, before you build 17 new desalination plants up and down the West Coast. Thank you, Therese.
And Harvey, I would like you to do a favor for me, and that is to just write me a note. I need to have a conversation about certain things with you on the ecology and whatnot. So write me a note at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. I don't know if you got that. Okay. Sarah, you're on the air from Dallas. How are you?
Greetings to you, Utrice, and
thank
greetings.
You.
Yes, ma'am. Greetings to the PRN audience. I'll start off by wishing you an enjoyable weekend, and
thank
hope
you.
That you are faring much better out there than I am, because it seems that we are having all kinds of weather, Utrice. Within the past few days, we have had three different seasons that came through. We went from winter with snow to spring, and then to summer. It was like 70 something degrees. So my body don't know how to react to all of this. Within a matter of 7 days. So, but we are coping out here. Utrice, this might be a good spot, Utrice, to put your show on, put it on Friday. We could call it Free Your Mind Fridays. And that way people could just go ahead and get it off their chest before the weekend instead of doing it midweek.
A kind of a stress reliever?
Yes, ma'am. We just put it at the tail end of the week, and we can just free our minds and just go on off to the weekend. But
okay, well, maybe let's put that up to a vote. If people want to switch it to Fridays, it's fine by me.
Yes, ma'am. But here's what I want to do to free my mind on your topic. I appreciate Attorney Alton Maddox coming on and giving us a take on the law, because he laid out the case very well. And now all of a sudden we are starting to see these jurors being popping out here, coming out, giving their comments as to why it is that they came down on the side that they did. And as I keep repeating, Utrice, on this situation, Attorney Maddox laid it out, is that we are still operating under the Dred Scott decision, where no one white is going to be found guilty of actually murdering a black individual, even though this person was unharmed. He was exercising his right to be in his vehicle, play his music. If you on the outside, you don't like it, as I've done several times, where loud music has been played, I've rolled my windows up, drive off, go somewhere else and get my gas or get whatever it is I'm trying to get so I would not be annoyed. It's not up to me to be matrilineal and to go out there and to tell people, hey, you need to turn your music down, because I'm sure if he told these young, these teens to turn their music down, I'm sure he didn't do it in a very nice way. I'm sure he probably just said, hey, turn the guy, you know, and use a few expletives and tell him to turn the music down. And that could have been what escalated him. They could have turned it down, laugh amongst themselves, and then just turn it up even louder to irritate him, because I've seen it done before. So he aggravated the situation because he had no business to be telling anyone else what to do in their privacy of their vehicles, just as I don't have any business to tell him what it is that he wants to do. This jury decided to come back with the lesser of the two evil votes. They decided that, you know what, we're going to come back with an easier thing. We can get him for attempted murder of the three living youths, but we are not going to get him on the actual murder of this young man, because as Attorney Maddox says, they exercise what is called ethics in their community, whereby they have to go back there, they have to live amongst themselves, and this is not something that community is going to punish them, because white people punish their own people when you're not upholding the racist code. And if these people go back to their community and they were to vote guilty, a majority white jury to vote guilty that this man actually did something, that community would have shunned them. They would have done all kinds of things to make themselves feel unpleasant and unwelcome until they eventually would have to pack up and move to go somewhere else. So all of these jurors coming out, including this young female that came out yesterday, juror number 8, to say why it is that she felt how she did, looking crazy as ever in what she is saying. You know what? You would be best to go and just be quiet. Don't come out. Don't say nothing, because nobody needs to know who you are. You're coming out here to make some kind of money, get yourself notarized, get on the scene. Nobody wants to know what you have to say when you're coming out sounding all crazy.
Well, were you satisfied? I'm sure you wouldn't. So why am I asking the question this way? How do you account then for the fact that they did come to a conclusion on the second-degree attempted murder charges, which carry substantial penalties? He's looking at essentially 90 years in jail.
Well, you're the 90 years in prison part. Yes, retreats, but that's what I said, the lesser of the two evil. He's looking at 90 years for an attempted murder, but he's not getting any, but they're undecided on him actually killing. The 90 years is for the people who lived, not for the one who actually died. They did not come back with anything on the person who actually died.
Correct.
So therefore, they have given themselves an out. They've given themselves a lesser of the two evils to say, no, we are not going to convict this white man, even though he said all these racist things in prison. He has shown himself to be a sociopath to show that he has no kind of compassion for these people. And throughout his correspondence as well as his phone calls, but they have still decided that they're going to go on the lesser of the two evils, even though you're still getting an evil, but they're going to the point of the least resistance. Last but not least, Retrieve, I'm going to get off here. Today is a commemoration of the anniversary of the assassination of Malcolm X. And we have had all kinds of stuff in the media with what has been done with the soiling of his image by these ignorant youths that we have out here who have decided to take iconic images of the late Malcolm and use it for their own commercialized process. We're going to have to do something, Utrecht's Attorney Maddox says, with ethics in our community. We're going to have to start doing something because we can't chalk this up to ignorance. This is no longer ignorance. This is called deliberate, willful ignorance where people are doing these things, and we all know who is behind the scene, who is pulling the lever, because whoever decided to put that photo image for whatever reason, we know it did not look like me and you. Somebody is behind the scene did it, because these artists do not exercise total control as to what they might want. They could say, yeah, this is a good image, but we know who ultimately have the final say as to what go on that cover, and this is a slap in the face. This is Black History Month, and every Black History Month we go through some sort of insult like this, and we need to call it out, and we're going to need to do something about this.
Well, you'd be surprised to know that a large number of the problems rest within the community itself. People look to Malcolm X, and this is the iconization of these heroes. They put these images up, and they're kind of it's a fashion statement. If you were to ask any one of those folks, have you read any of his works, or have you read anything about him? The answer will be no. I talked about that with respect to the Schomburg Library is smack in the middle of the community, and yet it is vastly underused. I mean, the world collection of history relating to people of African heritage all over the world, and we see this as a lack of respect. I see it all the time. You turn on the television and there are these people dressed up in clearly meaning to indicate Black church robes, like, you know, singing choirs, and they're singing about a car, and getting all spiritual and mimicking what I believe to be the sacred traditions of the Black church, reduced to, once the Black people dressed up in choir robes, getting all excited about a Toyota or whatever the car is. Yeah. So we engage in these forms of self-deprecation, and it suggests that a great deal of education needs to go on in the community, because there are some things, whether people like it or not, whether they approve or not, there are some things that are absolutely sacred. They're not to be touched, because these are icons. They're not just symbols of, in and of themselves. They embody a great deal of a historical story. And when people are casual about it, and the people who are casual about it usually are the very people who ought to be guarding the sanctity of these symbols. So that's an issue within the community. You're absolutely correct. Thanks for calling.
Yes, Dutry. Thank you very much.
Thank you. From Louisiana, no, from L.A., sorry. DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht. How are
Hello.
You?
Hello.
Good. I'm first wanted to tell you that I really enjoyed your well, first, I hope you have a nice weekend, and to all the listeners
here.
Out there
Same
in
here.
Your audience, I hope they have a nice weekend. And, so what I wanted to say, first of all, is that I really enjoyed your through the conversations with the attorney Automatics. I really enjoyed that, and I learned a lot. And that man, he's definitely one of the jewels of our movement. He's a very honest man, and he's a stellar attorney. So I really appreciated that, and I wanted to thank you.
Thank you. Thanks a
okay.
lot.
Yeah. And so, but what I called in about today, and you and I have corresponded back and forth on email about this, is this arrangement, this First Look Media arrangement with the journalists Glenn Greenwald and Jeremy Scahill, Laura Poitras, and they're teaming up with this Pierre Omidyar of PayPal. Where do I start? I mean, I was so, you know, I presented this to other left-leaning progressive shows and blogs and things, and even some libertarians who seem to agree about the NSA issues. And nobody wants to even believe that there's something phony going on, something, you know, scandalous going on here. What we're seeing here, I think, is they're rushing, the people are rushing over to this guy because they see the money. It's the money. Mm-hmm. Now, I did some more snooping around, and not only do we have, like I said, Laura Poitras and Jeremy Scahill and Glenn Greenwald, but I ran into another article on rawstory.com that now the journalist Matt Taibbi, who used to be with Rolling Stone, is also joining them over there on FSL, for FLM, First Look Media. And he's going to be, I believe, associated with the show that Glenn Greenwald is, or the publication Glenn Greenwald is in charge of, The Intercept. Now, Matt Taibbi, I've always respected this guy because he's a hard-hitting journalist. He always exposes things, particularly with these phony wars and things like that. So I really enjoy him, whether he's on Democracy Now! Or some other show or something like that. So he's rushing over there as well. So now we have four journalists, supposedly lefty journalists, progressives, going to team up with a guy who cooperated with the NSA in giving information to on his customers, American citizens. So this stinks to me. So I went to the website for the Intercept, the publication which Glenn Greenwald started, and I looked at their mission statement. And it says here that I'm going to go to the long-term mission. It says a long-term mission is to produce fearless adversarial journalism across a wide range of issues. Now, what issues? Okay, so when you approach the issues of spying on people, namely customers of PayPal who put their personal information, credit card information, or whatever, into his site, are you going to be fearless and adversarial when it comes to that? In light of the fact that the person who's funding you is or used to be the CEO of PayPal? I don't think so. This stinks. It really does stink. And you know, we can surmise from their actions what this is about. This is just them rushing over because the man has billions of dollars, rushing over to try and get paid, to eat out of the trough. You know what I mean? So what do you think about this? I already know what you think, but
Well, this is a major, major beginning of a trend that has existed for a long time within the media and what people consider alternative media. But alternative media, which holds itself up generally as being, beyond the temptations and the tendencies of regular media, they hold themselves to be taint-proof, to be very, very immune to all of these other temptations, but in fact, they embody them. The story starts here, the significance of this effort starts with the fact that they can easily set aside these contradictions. Right. And say, well, yes, we are now, they've decided to market themselves as the great dragon slayers, but they are feeding at the table of the dragon.
Right.
And nobody's pointing that out. But what really should upset people, especially those who were holding Ed Snowden to be a great hero, is how they have commodified and how they have commercialized and merchandised information that initially was said to be in the public interest. That is to say, Snowden was supposed to be the guy who is championing the rights of citizens. And yet, what we see is that this guy, Greenwald, I mean, we have to ask the question, what now, how is Snowden to be regarded? Snowden was supposed to be the guy lifted up as the great champion of Fourth Amendment rights and, privacy protections for citizens and so forth. Plus, he, of course, talked about the overreach of government. I am saying this is my opinion. I'm saying that this, we need to understand that even Snowden and the cabal that is now forming, they have decided that they have such power to persuade people that they could actually get away with a lot of these ethical issues that should be confronted and that right. normally would be confronted if it weren't them. If it were other people, they would be talking about this ad infinitum.
Right.
But
exactly.
Now, you need to stand off and leave them alone. But
right.
There's still an issue here. When Snowden stole these records and had them in his possession, he also had it within his control. Now, what he's saying, in effect, is, and this is, again, the relationship between the so-called hero and the rest of the world supporting him, what he's saying is, I individually can make decisions about what it is I'm doing without your permission. You will just have to trust that we know what we're doing. So on the one hand, they demand accountability from the systems of government that they ostensibly are attacking, but nobody's supposed to question them. So when he transfers this body of information, first of all, we have to ask, under what assurances and authority you took this information and you are requiring the world community to support you because you are the paragon of good judgment? Is Glenn Greenwald good judgment? To hand him all of this good judgment? And heaven knows where this other information has gone. So in effect, Snowden cannot be looked upon, and he has to be seen now as a person who is apt to do anything in the interest of, self-preservation and expediency.
Of himself.
That's
and one
right.
last thing also, Eutrice, in relation to this Pierre Omidyar, I think, this is just my opinion of what I'm gathering here, is that there's a deeper level to this guy's cooperation with the NSA, and he's doing this to pay these journalists off, and they're accepting it. It's kind of like they have him by the cojones, as my Hispanic mm-hmm. friends say. in a way. And then, okay, so let's delve into what might be there. Okay, this is only conjecture, but I'm thinking, okay, we already know he cooperated with the NSA to give information on American citizens. I'm thinking that since PayPal is an international service through which people use their credit cards, e-checks, and things like that, that he has also divulged information on companies and individuals around the world. And this would hurt his business very much because I'm sure he has a lot more customers that are outside the United States than inside the millions of customers he has inside the United States. So this is a larger issue for him.
This is huge.
If this gets divulged, I mean, this could bring down PayPal. If he's doing the same thing with everybody's information around the world, think how huge that could be. It could bring down PayPal. They could literally overnight be destroyed. So I think this is a payoff.
Well, here's the thing. Here's a very interesting thing. I talked some time ago about Julian Assange, who envisions himself and carries himself as the president of a virtual world. Wow. He has that awesome power. Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks. We don't know what kind of information these people have.
Right.
And here's the thing. Do not believe for a minute that The Guardian newspaper for which Glenn Greenwald wrote the couple of stories. If anybody believes that those stories were run without corroboration with the intelligence community in Britain, you have to be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That newspaper will not publish, nor would the Washington Post publish a news article about these secret files without collaborating with the Secret Service community.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way they operate. Number one, they have to shield themselves legally. They cannot publish any article, especially of this type, knowing that they stand a huge legal question. They have to resolve this legal question, knowing that the stories are predicated on stolen classified information that was made very public. You see, it was done in a way that the journalistic community is acting as if, well, you know, this is just another expose. These are not regular exposés. These are stories about classified government information. And I will tell you, no one of these major papers, whether it's the New York Times or the Washington Post or the London Guardian, will publish any story that would severely compromise the nation. I mean, they could talk about how the NSA is gathering private information and so forth. That, you can defend yourself there. But a newspaper will have a very rough time defending itself against the government's accusations and interests that the information that they are publishing or about to publish will compromise to a significant degree the security of the nation. So don't be fooled with this idea that, oh, look what they published. They published these stories because their legal department called up the MI6 or MI5, or they called up the NSA and other secret agents and services and said, look, tell us what we can do here and how we could manage this information to make it appear that, yes, it's a, quote, expose, but not to the extent that it would actually give information that we cannot afford to have out there. and compromise our security interests with respect to the rest of the world. So don't be fooled about that. I'm not fooled about this business about,
absolutely,
oh, look, the, you know, the Guardian published the story. No, the Guardian published the story after it was cleared. The legal department
cleared.
Called up and said, okay,
absolutely,
this is how it works, and they all agreed. Secondly,
absolutely, and the bottom line on that is that none of these papers or outlets are any match for a government that can legislate, because they can always change the rules on you, shut you down, and make life real hard for you. And that's the reason why. But to me, that's not real journalism. So, Yatrice, I love our conversation back and forth. I'll continue to be in contact with you through email. Love the show. Everybody out there, have a nice weekend. And Yatrice, Another excellent show from you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, DX from L.A.
Bye-bye.
We go to New York. Ali is waiting for us there. Hello, Ali.
Hi, Latrice. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
I just wanted to say hello to Harvey, because the other day I had to say hooray to him. He gave that joke about getting a hug at the, I think, pharmacy. So I hope that he's still listening. And I just wanted to say that to him. But I wanted to say two things here. One, you're talking about Pim Paul and the man who owns Pim Paul. I don't understand how Greenwald is working with this guy, because this guy is the same guy that refused to, I believe, to accept donation for WikiLeaks. So how can these people be connected? I'm a little bit confused about that. How can Greenwald, being that he supposedly works with Julian Assange, now could be working for Pim Paul when Pim Paul refused to take money for WikiLeaks?
Well, here's the thing. You have all of these folks coming together in this effort have something in common. And what they have in common is an egotistical need to represent themselves as stars in their own stratospheres. They haven't been able to achieve it outside of that. I mean, they've gotten recognition for their work and so forth. But there is a Hollywoodization of journalism. People want to be stars. It is not the information that is the star. The story isn't the star. It's the person that is the star. And in the world of alternative media, this is, in effect, their answer to the world of Hollywood-type news stars. They now have their own little firmament where they can all gather. Secondly, and this is really, really important, Pierre Omidyar paid exactly the same amount of money to get this deal launched, $250 million, that Jeff Bezos paid to acquire the Washington Post. So we have a battle of the titans. And I said before, a long time ago, that information is power. These folks are the monoliths of the world. I mean, they have carved out their own industries, and they loom large in these industries. They have untold amounts of money to do what they wish. And the pushing now for control of information, serious control of information. We have Bill Gates acquiring entire libraries, just buying up information, because in the future, in the very near future, information will be wealth. Then the quality of information you control and the volume of information you control will be very much linked to wealth. So yeah, they've made it possible to get all these things done at the same time, but they are now touting themselves as the Hollywood stars. That's the main thing. Glenn Greenwald, you can see from the way he has carried himself, he's just said, I'm a star. Now, what makes him a star? What even makes him a journalist? The guy was a lawyer, not a particularly successful one. and he has written stories. Now, he didn't go dig up, you understand how he became this great person globally. He is enjoying what he never could enjoy by virtue of being affiliated with this information. This information has made everybody a star. It has made Mr. Snowden a star, and we have to have questions about him and his ethics because he showed himself to be an inveterate liar. He has lied about his qualifications. He lied about having a high school diploma. He lied about going to the university, stole a test in order to pass it. He deceived his co-workers, got three of them in very deep water. 25 others are under investigation. And he's just going on. He doesn't even mention them, let alone apologize for the fact that he compromised their ability to earn a living and their careers. So he has established himself as a person that cannot really be trusted and be believed. But all these folks have this in common. They have these huge ego needs, and this is how they're meeting them. And as I said before, we need to see whether this was a play out of the design of Julian Assange, who I think, it's not a far-fetched idea that you have Edward Snowden's all over the world collecting information, sensitive information from systems, governmental systems all over the world, and that is the way you control the world. None of these people have done stories highly critical, for example, of Russia. they're not doing stories critical of China. So because Assange has never attacked Russia, he's not attacked China, because there is a geopolitical game that they're playing. So we'll see how it all plays out. We'll see. Thanks, Ali.
Okay, thank you
so much for your call. 888-874-4888. This is a very interesting development. How these folks can justify things that weren't other people, they would be railing and subjecting them to all kinds of scrutiny. But their attitude is, you don't need to ask us any questions. You should just trust that what we say, we are above scrutiny. We are above being questioned. And I know a couple of them personally, and I have questions, including about their journalism. I certainly do. And I had said so several times. This is what we ought to, they would say, well, look, what we're establishing here is an alternative. This is the real, real, real alternative that you've been waiting for. Please. They've been working in systems all along that have had cozy relationships with the intelligence community. Nobody in the New York Times gets a story printed that would be deemed harmful to U.S. security interests. In fact, many of the overseas bureau chiefs, many of the people reporting, are themselves expected to comply with the national security interests of the United States. They regularly report to the intelligence community of the United States. They tell them what they see because, as reporters, quote unquote, they are in areas, sensitive areas, where they gather information and intelligence. So many of these folks that you see around there with their bylines and big papers, they are operating as intelligence reporters. Don't be fooled about that. Hello, KJ, sorry, from New York. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Patrice. I listen to your show as often as I can. I just find it a little odd. In fact, what you've been saying is to be skeptical of what these whistleblowers have written, and certainly Greenwald and Jeremy Skakel and their articles they put out. I think that they're doing a great service to all of us who wish to engage in an understanding of what's going on with our national security apparatus and what our government is doing and not reporting. Whether or not we can agree on it credible or choose to malign their character or say they have egos is irrelevant. I think there's so little information that's been out there, and sure, it should be questioned, just as you've had, as you stated, prior prominent individuals and editors and writers at the New York Times and New York Post who have admitted to collaborating with CIA and government officials in prior releases of information. But I think it does us a disservice to berate them as characters questionable, because that's what I think the security apparatus wants to do, to obfuscate the issue by demeaning or attacking the persons that are putting out information. To suggest there's a conspiracy, I think it's a little bit over the top. Clearly I have a great deal of respect for Progressive Radio Network and Gary Knoll's work, but he, like all others, people who do this kind of work do it lonely in a lonesome vacuum in many ways, and they have to have some degree of sense of themselves. And I call it an ego, if you will. Gary has an ego. I'm sure you do too. We all do. And so to say that, you know, Snowden or any of them, Skakel have it, yes, they have to stand up to the challenges before them to know that they have some grounds to move forward. And I say that philosophically, but I said this is, I think you're over the top with this is sort of scathing indictment of their character. I think it's over the top. Really
good. Okay. All right. I respect your view. However, what I'm saying is this. When they are themselves engaging in this, they are saying to the public, give us your unqualified support. And the trade-off is, don't ask us any questions, nor should you express any skepticism about us. Express skepticism about the people we tell you to do. These folks are not as militant as they are about the fact that they are fighting against, quote, the system, unquote. They nonetheless operate by an entirely different set of rules.
I don't see that. I don't see that. I think they present a point of view for us to look at and to engage in discussion of the matter, not to attack their character. I mean, we could all indict each other left and right.
I'm not attacking their character. I'm saying this is my analysis of what the situation is. They are portraying these things and giving these signals that say to us, there is reason to ask you some questions, and there's reason to demand accountability from them also.
I think
that's
we need to look at the substance of the question. I think your whole conversation around this, and this is not the first show, has been one to say, let's look at them, when in fact that's exactly what the security apparatus wants us to do, attack each other. I think it's
I say let's look at what their actions tell us about them.
I do, you know, try to be critical in observing what they've written and to take in the context of what I know. But I think that what they're disclosing is important in the dialogue. Not even that they're disclosing.
The dialogue that
we're having is one that we need to engage in. It is very real that we're living in a system that is essentially intended to not reveal this information. So any insight into it, it's critical.
But KJ, what I am saying, just to say, is yes, I understand that they are giving us information that, quote, many people think is important, unquote. That's great. But that also is part of my suspicion. If you have, you have all these files, we don't know what you have. We are not supposed to ask you any questions because you are beyond being questioned. You are beyond being asked what it is your intentions are. Who are you basically affiliated with? What is the deal here? And how is it that information stolen for the purpose of the public good somehow does not get transmitted through the channels that had been established? Let me finish. They hoard the information. And now it is completely, you cannot deny it. It is now commodified. It is now for sale. You don't even know what they're doing with the information. What does Pierre Omidyar, what will he benefit by he is now, for technical purposes, he is now, you can say, and all of these folks, they are now personal owners of information we have no idea what it is about.
Well, as it is disclosed, we shall know. I would think it would be
No, they can't do that. Because
I don't think it's a proprietary right. I agree with you. It shouldn't be commodified, but I think
but
that before we assume that, Jeremy Skakel regularly appears on Democracy Now.
I know Jeremy Skakel since he was an intern, all right? I know Jeremy Skakel, and I know the whole works about alternative media and all this kind of stuff. You just glossed it over yourself. You admitted the information is now basically has been capitalized.
No, I didn't say that. I uttered essentially what you have stated. I don't know that to be a fact.
It is now part of an industry. They have launched a media business. It's a business. They've launched a business around the information that they have. Now, how else should you interpret that?
I would like to learn more about the apparatus that you allege as a business. If they're disclosing information that can probably be obtained, or is not publicly obtained, but they are releasing it or not stealing it, I won't even say that.
These are the people who rail against the corporate world. They're in a corporation now. But it's different because they are officers, if you will, or stakeholders in a corporation. That makes it different.
They may have chosen that mode.
They are partners now with a guy whose company participated in the very thing that they're attacking. Why is that supposed to be unquestioned? They are contradictions. But the main thing that I'm saying is, look at what has been done with the information. The information, the initial explanation that we got from the person who stole it was, I am doing this in the public interest, and I've selected people in the media to tell us what it is that they need to tell us. And I'm saying to you that even then, there were limitations, and I strongly suspect, because it is the way the media operates, they are not going to publish any information that, in their view and their legal department's view, because most of these papers have ongoing relationships with the intelligence community. It is understood. When a reporter goes and covers a story, let's say in some place or the other, they are, quote, debriefed, unquote. What does that mean? It means that there's a relationship between that newspaper or outfit, media outfit, with the intelligence community, and they see these folks as having information that might be useful to the national interest. This is established. So when these folks are now making a living, and they are making a living on information and in partnership with the corporate structure that they're supposed to be so opposed to, you have to ask questions. What are your ethics? And if it is a matter of expediency, well, you know, we can close our eyes. We vouch for him. Omidyar, he's a good guy. What does that mean to me? I don't care what it means to you. I know what it symbolizes to me about you. It means that you are negotiable. And all of these hard and fast ethical rules and all this morality that you talk about, it just shows to me that, again, you're quite flexible. And you, too, cannot be trusted. Your judgment is off. Your judgment does not line up with what it is you say you represent. So I could ask questions. I know for a lot of folks this is going to be very, very sad because they want so much to hold on to this idea that, yes, we have these dragon slayers and they're out there. But let me tell you something. I've seen enough of the dragon slayers. And what motivates them is the same thing that motivates the dragon slayers every place else. You know, it's about me. I, me, and my. That's number one. The information isn't the story. I am the story. And we have to decide what is our view. This information, stolen, is now part of a corporate effort, a corporate process. And certain people are feeding off of it in partnership with a contradiction, a corporate contradiction. They can't get away from that. They have to answer some questions, period. Okay, we have a fast one from Janice from New Mexico. You're on the air.
Hi, Chief. I just wanted to say that going back to what Harvey was talking about, and I do have a comment about Julian Assad. Let me just say that first. Even Hoover says that when people are hiding things, it's usually to protect themselves. So if the government really thinks that everybody is a potential domestic terrorist and they have to keep all this metadata on everybody, why is it that they couldn't protect, for instance, Newark Airport had three individuals hopping the fence and going into the plane area. That's one thing. While the Homeland Security or the TSA is inside bodily frisking a 92-year-old woman in a diaper on oxygen in a wheelchair. The other thing is you have a lot of contradictions. We have all this metadata. Why didn't we save our diplomats in Benghazi? Okay, whereas we have, and then we have an officer that was in Afghanistan, and apparently he was the head of a troop of soldiers, and he had to fire on some Afghanis, and he was prosecuted, supposedly I believe it was because he fired first in a war zone, but yet we have the D.C. Police with a woman driving with a one-year-old around Washington, maybe erratically, maybe fast, but they shoot in her car, killing her, because they suspect she may be a domestic terrorist. So there's a lot of ridiculous things that I see, and also you have everybody saying that from Homeland Security and all this metadata collection and NSA and CIA, we need this to protect the country. But then when they sequestered the nuclear sub maintenance people back last year, you had the head of the Defense Department on cable and national TV telling the world with some journalists asking him, he said, we had to lay off some of our nuclear sub maintenance table, and the journalist goes, well, does that mean that we have we can't protect our borders? Does that mean we have a defense problem? And he goes, well, kind of like, quote, hell yeah.
But Janice, here's the thing. We have to close it now, so I just want to respond quickly. What you are relating is the nature of life and governing and government, and that is, it's riddled with contradictions. And that is why we question things, as you are, when we spot these contradictions. And I'm saying with this issue, there's a great deal of contradictions, and you need to question them. Thanks so much for joining me today. Wake Up Call is next with Richard Martin. Do drop me a line at leadstories@gmail.com or leadstories with Utrecht Lead. Thanks so much for being with me today.